Hey, everybody. Before we begin the episode today, I wanted to let you know of a few things. One, I'm still open to new opportunities. So if you or your company needs someone to come in and help with any Swift development, BrightDigit is available. Reach out to me, leo@brightdigit.com, or you can go to the website, brightdigit.com, to get more details. Let's set up a time to talk and see how I can help you or your team with whatever project they're working on. Secondly, I'll be speaking at SwiftCraft. This will be from May 21st to 24th. You can check that out on the website, swiftcraft.uk. And I will be speaking on advancing in Swift by learning how to count. So I'll go over some stuff about the history of numbers and mathematics and how it's related to the evolution and complexities of Swift. I would love to see you there if you're going to be in the UK, in Kent. Come check it out. And then I have been doing a live stream every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 a.m. Eastern time, and I'm hoping to continue to do that as well. I've been doing stuff with Bushel and with a new app that I'm working on that I will be revealing soon. So if you are interested in learning what is coming down the line, you could definitely want to check out my live stream. It's on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/brightdigit. It's also on LinkedIn and on Twitter as well. If you like what you see with Bushel in those live streams and want to test some of these features out, I'm still looking for beta testers for Bushel, and I'd love for you to join and get an exciting look at what you can do in Bushel. So definitely check it out at getbushel.pa. And lastly, we still have our Patreon. So if you want to get early access to episodes like this, or you want to get access to upcoming articles and drafts, and a little bit of the feedback I've been getting from folks, super helpful, go to patreon.com/brightdigit.com. That's about it. So thank you again for joining me for this episode, and I hope you enjoy the rest of it. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Empower Apps. I'm your host, Leo Dion. Today, I'm joined by Malin Sundberg and Kai Dombrowski of, what's the name of your company? I should probably...
Triple Glaze Studios.
I've known you guys for quite a few years, so makers of Orbit and Mercury. Thank you so much for both of you joining me today.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
We've had Malin on. We haven't had Kai. So Kai, I'll let you take it away by introducing yourself.
All right. I mean, Malin and my introductions are usually pretty similar because we're working together. We're running our company together. We work on...
We're also a couple. It's probably...
We're a couple together. We work on most of our projects together. There are some few ones every now and then where it's only one of us. But yeah, overall, we're both software developers, designers, copywriters, whatever you might need to build apps. And we live in Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
Awesome. What did you want to say? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, guys, originally from Germany. I'm from Sweden. That's like the main difference, I guess, in our story past there.
Yeah, that's how you can tell us apart.
Yeah. Got it. Okay, thanks. I was confused for a second who I was talking to. So yeah, that helps. I'm not quite familiar with what the balance on your team is. Like, who's more of the designer and who's more of the developer, if anything?
Yeah, it's very mixed, like, day by day. I think it seems logical that we would, like, divide it a bit more specifically. Like, one does development, one does design. But that never really felt natural to us. I think we both are just very enthusiastic about both areas. So we tend to both do development and design. But I would say we have, like, certain... I think within our own apps, there are certain features that one of us might be more enthusiastic about and the other one is not as enthusiastic about. Then it tends to sort of be a natural split that like one of us focuses on that feature or one of us focuses on the other. So it's a bit more feature-based. I would say that like there are some differences with like the type of design tasks. I think Kai is like really good with a user experience and like making sure that everything is just like very clear for the user. It's great. I tend to be like, can't we just like add a little bit more glass layers, make it a bit more transparent, and then it just becomes illegible now and then. And Kai's like a good balance, like pushing me back. Like, you know, right. Like, it would be great if people could see the text in our app as well. I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But it's often we're kind of switching roles between the designer and the critic, which is pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever I design a feature, Malin's immediately going to, you know, shred it to pieces and talk about all the things that suck. And vice versa. If Malin designs something, then I will be the first one that actually sees it. So I think it works pretty well.
Yeah.
And we're kind of, because I think we do have a lot of overlapping skills, but different priorities within those sometimes. Mm-hmm. It works out really well that we're kind of just both kind of pulling it from our ends and landing on something in the middle that works really well.
Yeah. And we're also pretty like competitive amongst each other, and it sounds like something maybe you shouldn't do, but we found that to be a really fun way of like building features. Yeah. So like sometimes if we want to like build something new and we're like in that brainstorming phase, we start out like creating a Figma document and we might have like a swim lane each, and then we're like iterating on it and like trying to come up with like we work sort of individually first, trying to come up with the best, and then we show it to each other and then we talk about it and steal from each other's sort of concept, and then we end up coming to like a good conclusion. It's a very fun way of collaborating.
Do you want to explain that a little bit more in detail? What exactly that first Figma document is for and how it helps you guys?
Yeah, I think because we are both sort of developing and designing, we tend to not get to like a final design before we start implementing it, before we start building it in SwiftUI or UIKit. But it's more for us to sort of be able to like come up with sort of flows or initial ideas rather than having to like do it all in code. I gotta say, SwiftUI has made us do a lot more of that directly in code. But before we were as full in on SwiftUI, we did use that a lot more.
Before it came out?
Or if we do like something web related and we want to like iterate on our website, we would use that approach. But it's often for like a lower fidelity sort of version of what we want to build.
And something quick when it's like, what is the best way of, let's say, entering a new trip in Mercury? Then we might have like Malin saying on top, mine on the bottom. And we just both kind of think, here's kind of what we think the flow should look like roughly. And then we look at each other. So like, oh, this is a good idea that Malin had. I'll take that on my next iteration. And Malin steals something from me. And then we kind of just keep stealing from each other until we're like, hey, we actually landed on something that we like now. But it's not that we always go that route. It really depends on, sometimes it is a good way when we both have very different ideas of where to even start with a feature or with a flow, because then it's like, hey, let's actually put this somewhere so we can see what it feels like. Or when we feel like we have no idea, because then the competitive side kind of kicks in, because if you have no idea, but you're competing for like whose design is more fun, more interesting to look at, or whatever our goal is, then you kind of have to come up with something. So I think it's a good trick to trick our brains into doing something when we don't necessarily have a direct idea. Because sometimes we build a flow and it's like, this is clearly how it's going to be. And we both agree and we just go building it, start building it immediately.
What are some other tasks you think developers don't think of that you've implemented as part of your process?
It's a good question. I think, I don't know if other people don't do it, but I feel like there's a lot of things that take way more time than you initially expect related to like working on your own app. I would say it's probably I don't want to say marketing. I think marketing is sort of like a big beast on its own, but like all the things that goes on related to you, like showing people what your app can do. So it can be things like screenshots on the app store, or if you want to put a press kit together, or if you want to make like a cool like video. I think we've been talking for a while now that it would be really fun for our trip forecast feature in Mercury to show like someone looking at their phone in Vancouver and it's raining above them, and then the next shot is them in the sun and like showing the app that way. And we're like having those ideas, and then we're like, we have made some very simpler, like much simpler videos than that, and we think back of that and like realize how much longer those type of things take than coming up with that idea. Like we have a lot of sort of fun, quirky ideas like that, but realizing that like that means that you're going to take that time away from like building the app and doing all of that. It's always hard to like, I don't know how to quantify one thing like that. So we try to see it more like, do we want to make this video because it's fun and we feel like we will learn things from it? Then we end up usually doing it, but we sort of try to balance it that way. But we've been really trying sort of stretching to like create a bit more things around the app itself, like especially like press kit when we're ready to launch something. That's been sort of a bigger focus.
Another thing we do, which is a little bit more development focused, and it's not super unique, but we try to get prototypes into builds for ourselves very quickly. So whenever we have an idea of something we want to build, like let's talk about trip forecast some more. When we built that initially, we just built like a super hacky implementation. It wouldn't actually work for any users. It would just kind of do the bare basics of like showing you the forecast for a second location in your timeline. It was like a hard-coded date. But we got it into the build really quickly and started living on it ourselves and realizing all the things that work well and all the things that really sucked. And then just kept iterating until we felt like it no longer annoyed us when we used it. And I think that's an approach we use for a lot of software development to get it into our own hands. You know, you always have like interesting ideas and then you can spend a lot of time designing them and you polish them all in Figma and then you implement it and then you use it for the first time. You're like, this kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And you wasted all this time.
Yeah.
So we always try to get it onto our phones as soon as possible. And then we just take off all the parts that annoy us until it's ready to be shipped.
That's an interesting idea, because when I was in college, I was introduced to the idea of paper prototyping. Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
And like, you seem to be much more like, let's get it on the actual phone and like actually try it on the actual hardware. What is the bare minimum in your, how can you get it to the prototype to be as prototypey as possible without spending like 3 hours trying to integrate it with core data or like doing networking stuff? You know what I mean?
The thing is, I do like paper prototypes in theory, but it's at some point, I think it's also where just mobile development is now with Swift UI and a lot of the kind of APIs we have. And maybe people are more artsy and crafty than me, but it's taking me longer to build a paper proto than whipping up a couple of views in Swift UI, right?
Yeah.
It's just where our prototype-iness comes into our code is just we don't build it. We're trying to be very strict on let's not build anything. Let's not handle any edge cases. Let's not just get the bare thing to somehow work enough that we can have it on our phones.
Yeah.
And then it's also, you know, paper is great. But you know, your phone is not paper. Your flows are not, you know, there's a lot of things that paper doesn't, you know, paper doesn't make you realize that what if you have a trip from Vancouver to Sydney and Sydney's in a different time zone that actually crosses the date boundary and all of a sudden all your views are getting mangled. Like there's a lot of value getting out of a hacky prototype because you start to, even if you don't think about them, you start to discover a lot of the edge cases that you then realize you have to handle once you actually build it out because your phone, all of a sudden, you know, all your charts are misaligned. You're like, why is that happening? That is not something that is necessarily something that you would find out. That the point of the prototype wasn't to find those edge cases, but having something that's actually real code makes you come across a lot of those edge cases that you can then add to your list of things we need to handle. So I think there's a lot of extra value you get out of it when it's real code, even though it's hacky code and not code you're planning on shipping, but just actual lines of code.
And I think in terms of like knowing how much to add there, I think it's important, like for us, it's important to have something that is like not finished, but like it's enough there for us to be able to use it like we would be using the feature. Like we don't want it to be something that we just look at for a second and then we put down. If we add it directly in the app and we can sort of live on it and get a feel for it, then I think we'll quickly know if it's something that we're like passionate about. And every time if we open the app every time and we are like thinking of those edge cases and that triggers that, then I think that's a really good way for us to like figure out if it's a feature worth building. And so I feel like it has to be sort of a little bit there for us to actually be able to evaluate that. And I think that depends a lot on the type of feature. So I think, for example, with the, let's say when we started building Marker in the first place, an important thing for us was just to figure out if like the way we're plotting the chart, like the colors were clear enough and if that looked good enough and if that was the right way we wanted to go. Then we focused a lot on the UI, like quickly prototyping that UI, but we didn't really care about the data. But something like trip forecast, the important thing was to check, does it look, so the way the app works, it's a little bit hard to explain in audio form. But basically, if you have a trip coming up, you first see like the days in the location where you're at. So let's say you have a couple of days when you're going to be in Vancouver, and then in 2 days you're leaving to California. Then you can basically see two charts next to each other, one showing the sort of temperatures for the first 2 days in Vancouver. And then you sort of see them almost like shoot up because you go into a much warmer place, so you can see sort of the delta and see how different it is. So for right. that, it was very important to get like a good sort of piece of set, like a set of data in there for us to be able to see, like, how is this going to look in those extreme cases? And so that was important in the prototype phase, rather than like focusing too much on the UI. We could use pieces we had already and then check how it looks with that data and the plotting there.
What, let's go to our next question. What's the difference between an app and a product in your opinion?
Sorry, that was a weird noise. I think it's, I don't know if it is a big difference. Like, I looked at this question beforehand and I feel like there is sort of, I guess product can just be broader, but also it sort of encompasses a bit more than like the development side. Like I mentioned earlier, there's like those additional things that you might not consider part of app development, like putting Presskit together, putting the App Store page together, like telling people that you've been building something. Those things to me feel a bit more sort of product focused. But then I think a product can also just be bigger. It might be that you have like different platforms and those type of things. What do you think, Kai?
Yeah, I mean, I think most apps are products, but not all products are apps, or most sure. products are not apps, right? So I also would struggle to define if we're trying to break it down, what kind of app would be an app but not a product? I think that becomes very thin, right?
Sounds like a Robot yeah. or Not episode by John Sarkisa.
Yeah, but I do agree. If you're thinking of like product work, to me, it's like just from a language perspective. If you're saying you work on a product, I would also think of there it to have a higher priority in what you're doing, right? It's not just a thing you build, but it's like you have like a product roadmap and you have, you know, you're trying to find your target audience. It feels like there's a lot of product work that is not development that goes into an app.
Mm-hmm.
And which is also often very important, right? You can have mm-hmm. the best app, but if you're not focusing if you have the best product or the best app in the world, but no one knows about it, that doesn't help anyone. So there's a lot of product work on an app that
mm-hmm.
helps you actually make it a sustainable endeavor and
yeah.
satisfying endeavor, because it's kind of nice when you build something that you enjoy using to then see other people also getting use of it. I think that's yeah. a very nice part of software development.
Yeah, but I think it can be very sort of, it can become really broad, like building a product in itself. I think it depends a mm-hmm. lot on sort of the surrounding situation. If it is like a company, a bigger company where you have a lot of people attached to it, then I think there's probably going to be more focus on
right.
those extra things.
Yeah.
Those,
and then there's also like, if you look at Orbit, for example, our time tracking invoicing app, I think that's a lot more because the product is really the apps across all platforms,
mm-hmm.
right? So the product of Orbit is you being able to use it on your watch, on your phone, on your iPad, on your Mac. Those are all individual, like those are four different apps, but they all form one product because you wouldn't, you know, if you're time tracking, if you're a lawyer and you're time tracking and you're at a client's place, it's kind of nice to just use the watch and start a thing without it being, you know, looking like you're getting distracted too much.
Right.
So there it's like four apps that form one product. So I think it's just different ways of looking at apps.
What has changed as far as making a product when it comes to Orbit? Because Orbit's your first main product, right?
Yeah, it was the first one that we sort of built together once we started our TripleList, our company. It was a while ago at this point that we started with it, but I think we were definitely taking more of a product, like traditional product approach. We thought that this was going to be the one, like a thing that we work on, that we like then focus a lot on those surrounding things.
Yeah, for Orbit we had like, Orbit was very different because mm-hmm. we were, I don't know, I want to say force, but life events kind of made us start Orbit and not have a lot of other income at the time. So we deliberately decided, all right, let's make this a thing that we can actually sell, something that we can, you know, make enough money off to pay for rent. So we had like goals of like how many customers we want mm-hmm. to have. We built features that were for people we thought would then in return give us money for it. But mm-hmm. it was, we kind of built it for ourselves. There was like That was kind of what it started
as.
But from then on, we spent, I would say, most of the time building features that were not actually for us, which was hard. Mercury came from a very different perspective. That was the... Orbit was really challenging and to kind of grow, and we tried to figure out a lot of things. So Mercury was really the project of like, hey, let's get back to having fun building apps and not worry too much about it. Like, if it's fine if no one cares about it. Let's just build something that we want to have. We were both big weather app fans. Some of our favorite weather apps were shut down. Like we liked Weatherline a lot, for example. That was going away. And so we thought, all right, let's just build like our own new favorite weather app and not really care about if anyone else, you know, wants to give us money for it. It would be nice, but it wasn't a goal.
So that
was a very different mindset. We put it on the App Store and people ended up liking it a lot more than we expected, which is nice, but it was not the goal. We did not think, hey, we need to have, you know, 600 subscribers on, you know, by the end of September, otherwise we have to figure out a better product market fit. It's, you know, it's a weather app. People like, if people care about the weather, they might like the way that we show the weather.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was just like it was a very different situation to be in where we could just build on it and focus on like having fun and building something that we think is just looking great. It's a big focus on Mercury that it should be like a delightful app that you like feel like that you're like when you look at it and the weather reflected based on colors, like it's just something that makes you a little bit happier. And that was something that I wanted to like experiment with, like having that part of the design in there. And it's something that it was very much like us just like focusing on those delights, but Orbit was very much coming from a feature development in more of a like fitting to users perspective.
Yeah. And for Mercury, we still had a lot of features that were like, we had a lot of ideas where we thought this would make a lot of sense in a weather app. No one's ever done that. So we had like, we did have a roadmap. It wasn't that we're like, let's release it and not maintain it kind of thing. We wanted to release it because it was summer that iOS 16 came out. So it was WeatherKit came out, Swift Charts came out. So it was a lot of things that also, you know, we thought, hey, this is a good opportunity to play with WeatherKit and play with Swift Charts. And we wanted, we always have that, you know, when we have a thing. We like, if you work for yourself and you have a lot of flexibility, setting some kind of deadline is usually a good idea because otherwise you just keep working on things and you never ship. So our deadline was we want to ship alongside iOS 16, which kind of, you know, reduce the scope when you hear about new APIs in early June and you know you're going to ship. And those APIs in that particular year were also a little bit flaky in the beginning.
But the way it is with version one, isn't it?
Yeah. But that, of course, compresses the scope. So we're like, all right, what can we actually have shippable by September or whenever? New iOS, you know, you don't, it's also, it's an interesting deadline because you know roughly when it will happen, but Apple's not going to give you the exact deadline. I still remember the 1 year where Tim Cook was on stage at a keynote saying, and what was it? iOS 14 is shipping today?
I think tomorrow, I like in 24 hours, so there was scrambling.
And I was like, that usually reviews take 24 hours. What are they doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was stressful.
So I think since that day, we always assume that like it will be shipped the day after the event, whenever that event. So whenever that event in September is announced, we think, we got to be ready on that day.
Right, and worst case scenario, we have an extra week to, you know, to get things ready. Yeah. So it's not too bad to be done too early.
What was I going to say? Do you believe in like releasing stuff early as possible and getting into people's hands? Or are you like, we got to have it perfect before we put it out? Or how do you balance that? You know what I mean?
Yep. Do you want to answer first on that?
I would say that we wanted to be quite polished. There might be, so like I mentioned, if we know we have the deadline.
I was going to say the opposite.
I know, I knew you would say that.
Polished, yes, but we're also very impatient.
Yes, but I would say what we do is to rather sort of narrow the scope. Okay, so I think it's different. It depends on what, where we are at. So we try to, I want to have, if I release a new app or if I release a new feature within the app, I want to be proud of it on release day. So I want it to be polished enough so that I can feel like I'm proud of it. And I would say that my my level of me reaching for being proud is like, it's quite a lot of work to get to that point. Like, I'm pretty picky in that way. So I would say it's pretty polished. But one thing we don't do, which I'm quite happy with, is that we don't hold features to sort of bundle them for a bigger update. So if we want to release a new, for example, we recently released like a new widget and we wanted to get that widget out there. The widget was done and it felt polished and it was working nicely. In the past, I would probably have thought that made sense to like not just release a widget, maybe wait and bundle that with like some other features that we're planning on building in the next 2 months and sort of hold it. But since building Orbit and having ongoing subscribers to like people paying for a subscription, I feel more inclined to rather like release the new features as we have them as like smaller updates so that people actually can get the benefit of it as soon as they're ready, because I don't really want to hold them back just to make like a bigger splash type of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of almost conflicting incentives, right? Because if you're from the marketing side of things and the promotion and the PR and those kind of things, ideally you have this big 3.0 update, right? Where you have 100 new features and you have your marketing videos and you have like a press release, you know, mm-hmm. that is a lot easier to tell people in the press and tell Apple and, you know, try to make as much noise as possible. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that means you probably held a whole bunch of really cool features for weeks or months to do all of that, right? Because mm-hmm. otherwise, mm-hmm. how do you make a big bundle out of it? And the other side is like, you have people that pay you money every month and you decided to withhold interesting improvements mm-hmm. from those people so you can make it a bigger splash. So I feel like we're aware that it would probably be smarter sometimes to hold things and make them a bigger release. That mm-hmm. we feel it's also, you know, just mentally, we feel more comfortable talking about a big update mm-hmm. than trying to tell press, hey, we made this really small, you know, improvement. That just feels not as easy to talk about than mm-hmm. if you're saying, hey, you know, we reinvented weather apps. That's an easier sell.
Yeah.
How about as far as like test flight? Do you do any test flight testing? And like, are you like more mm-hmm. willing to like one thought I've had is like doing a feature bundle, but like releasing those features as soon as they're ready on test flight. And then mm-hmm. once testing is completed, then release that big version. You know what I mean?
We have definitely done some bigger test flights when we were working on features that we just felt had so many edge cases. So the trip forecast feature, it has so much time zone calculation involved in it. So we just really felt it was hard for us to
as a background,
stress test
that. The trip forecast feature has 50% more lines of code than the rest of the app, like the base app, just as a weather app. And then it's like, the trip forecast is by far the biggest chunk of code in the entire app.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's sort of surprising, right? Because it feels like it's an accessory to your weather app, but there's so much that you have to think about and have to handle when you're building that compared to just showing the weather at one location, because all of a sudden you have one timeline that might span, you know, we show 10-day forecasts, so you could theoretically be in a completely different time zone every single day of the week, and you have to somehow handle that. And then what happens if the day ticks over? There's some places like in Australia where they have half an hour time zones, right? What happens if the day just ticked over in Adelaide, but while you're in Vancouver, it's not, you know, it hasn't ticked over yet. How do you handle all of that? So there's a lot of, or you go for a day trip. What does that mean? When does a day trip start? When does a day trip end? There's so much weird code that to handle all of that and make it feel. There's still one edge case that bothers me, but for the most part, it just does the right thing. Once you put in all your trips and you're just, you know, traveling places, it just does the right thing in all but one scenario that I have to figure out at some point soon.
So are you guys ready for this weekend? Because you know what this weekend is, right?
Oh,
daylight. Are we changing? Are you changing time?
Did you test that?
Yep.
Yes.
We did test that. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right.
It is looking kind of funny in the timeline when it's like it shows the same time twice.
Right. 2 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah. We're in the scenario, we're skipping an hour, right? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going forward. Yeah.
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 Yeah. But yeah, so to answer your question, I think in that scenario, it was just this huge feature. Like, we could not like justify for ourselves to travel between like 5 different time zones in a week to test this. So we had quite a bigger test flight group there so that we could have people in those different time zones.
And it's great. We have a friend of ours is a commercial airline pilot, and he's flying around all the time. So he was an excellent test flight user because he's probably, of all the people we know, the one that travels the most.
Yeah.
And he ran into a whole bunch of edge cases that we would have maybe found eventually, but having someone that uses the a new feature you build so excessively is just going to help you a lot, especially when it if it requires physical movement between mm-hmm. time zones. It's just a lot harder to test, and even in a simulator, right? You can do the best you can, but right. It's just no. Once you're actually especially on a plane, right? You're usually in some kind of airplane mode. You don't have location access. Then once you come down, then the phone realizes, and there's a lot of things that are happening once you land again. So that was really good that we had someone that could test it so excessively.
How do you deal with paywalls? Like, what are you like, this is the thing that you have to pay for, and this is mm-hmm. the thing you don't? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we spent a lot of time on this before release in the first version, just because something like Mercury has ongoing API calls, and if we're giving out like the main app for free, we're using those API calls, and that is an actual like cost for us. So we struggled, and we weren't sure how to strike that balance of like providing enough things for free so people get use out of the app to then like cover those costs. In the end, what we wanted to do was to actually like make it possible for people to like experience the app and actually see what the app is about and get the benefit, see how it would be useful in their daily lives. And we felt like either we could add like sample data for that, or we could actually provide real data. And we felt like rather than adding sample data, it's not really as relevant if it's something you want to try. Otherwise, if we just had sample data, you would look at it for like a minute and see and evaluate, and then maybe you don't see the value of it in the same way as if you would actually see how it is outside and how the temperature and how the colors are changing.
Or even worse, you open the app and you're like, this is not the right weather. This app sucks.
It doesn't even work.
Yeah.
So we ended up landing on charging for everything. Like, if you need a subscription for everything that makes automated API calls.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, that is...
That makes total sense, yeah.
Like the widget, right? The widget, worst case scenario, let's say it is... We're refreshing the data more frequently when we know there's a high chance of rain, because that is more variable, or when it is currently raining, because mm-hmm. then we want to show you like a minute-by-minute rain forecast.
Mm-hmm.
So the worst case scenario is you live in a place where it rains for 24 hours. We make an API call as frequently as every 15 minutes on a bunch of, you know, different factors.
Mm-hmm.
But that might even happen while you sleep, where you don't actually care about it. But we need that data to be there by the time you wake up, right? Because a lot of people, first thing they do is in the morning, they wake up, they check their phone for the weather because that they have to get ready for work, or mm-hmm. they want to go somewhere, right? So we obviously have to have that up to date. So that's the worst case scenario, right? Hitting the API every 15 minutes-ish. For 24 hours. That's not going to happen if you just use the main app as a person, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to, I mean, unless you're a super passionate Mercury user and you open the app every 15 minutes.
Yeah. Because every time you open the app, we still fetch the data. We still show accurate, like up-to-date data. It's just for those sort of accessory things that happen automatically in the background, like with the widgets.
Like widgets and stuff, yeah.
Mm. And then
Do you do any like server-side caching at all, so that way like bigger cities, you don't have to keep pulling it the same data over and over again?
It's really hard to do that if you still want to maintain a minute-by-minute rain forecast, because that is such a narrow, you know, it can literally rain on one side of the building and be dry on the other. Okay. Not saying that APIs are necessarily all capable of doing that kind of accuracy. But it's still, like 100 meters wouldn't make a big difference,
mm-hmm.
okay.
or 100 yards. So we don't think, I mean, maybe if, you know, if we grow to like Apple scale, then it probably makes sense. But at our scale, there's not enough people within a 100 yard radius that it wouldn't make sense to.
That makes sense.
So we just had to figure out a business model or like charge a price where we can make sure that we can make those API calls for those users. Mm. And if in the future we can ever optimize that, that's, we consider that a bonus, but not as, we didn't want any of that to be part of the calculation of how much we have to charge.
Yeah.
And also, okay. WeatherKit is surprisingly, we're using a whole bunch of different weather service providers, depending on like different regions you're in. We're combining it in some places where the weather data is not as fully featured. For example, in Europe, WeatherKit doesn't have minute by minute rain forecast. So we're pulling in data from Open Weather to show the minute by minute rain forecast. So, but of all the ones we're using, WeatherKit is really affordable. It's a really good API. It's not necessarily the highest accuracy everywhere in the world, but from a developer friendliness and affordability to get something off the ground, it's really quite impressive.
Yeah, and also I wanted to say that I think another thing to consider when we decided to like make the main app free and actually show accurate data is that we think there are many people who just want to try it out, and then we have noticed that like word of mouth is actually one of the like big sort of driver of new people trying it out and new downloads. So I think there's also some value in actually like showcasing what the app will look like at its best, because you will get people who might not feel like they can justify paying for a third-party weather app, and that's totally fine. And then, but then they might recommend it to someone, or they know that they have a trip coming up, so they'll try the trip, like they will unlock it for a period to try the trip forecast, or they have someone who wanna like try the trip feature. And I feel like it sort of helps for that word of mouth as well, if people can actually get real value out of the free version of the app too.
That said, for the widgets, we do show demo data, but we put a big demo label on there to hopefully make it obvious that this is not real data. Yeah, because we still want people to see what it would look like.
Yeah.
So you know what you're paying for, but at the same time, it's getting too expensive. We wouldn't make real API calls.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Is there, so besides the weather APIs and besides WeatherKit and anything Apple related, is there any other third-party APIs that you've used?
Apart from the other weather services, we are using only one extra weather API, which is just to get averages. So if we're showing in the app, if you hit the button, how many sunshine hours you get at a location over the year. So the average for each month of the year, and average rain precipitation, and average temperature. But other than that, I don't think we're using anything.
No, not for Mercury.
No.
Okay.
For Orbit, we do have the ongoing server, but
That's SDKs. On backend.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you're building this app, how do you decide what feature to build next? Where do those ideas come from? And how do you filter out the ideas that you really want to do, but you probably aren't going to help the business, if you know what I mean?
I think we have had a very different approach with Orbit versus Mercury. The Mercury approach is very much us thinking of like different ways of using a weather app that we would be like excited to use it for. So that's where Trip Forecast came from. The way we're going to add push notifications, but we want to add push notifications in a quite a different way from what like Apple's weather app does. And I think a core thing is that when we add a feature we want to have a new sort of spin on it, or something that just something that's a bit more interesting that way. I don't know really how to, I'm not sure if I describe it right, Kai.
The most requested feature we get is to add weather radar.
Yes.
But we just don't know, like there are apps that have really good weather radars. We don't immediately have a good idea of how can we make this any better.
Yeah.
So I think people that the weather radar is the core thing, they should probably use an app that's made by developers that really care about weather radars. It's just not a thing we're particularly passionate about. We might add it in the future, but as of right now, we don't have a good idea of how can we make it better than some of the other apps that are out there.
Yeah.
So rather than trying to like build something that we don't care super much about, that we wouldn't use ourselves, that we don't even know, we wouldn't even be able to evaluate, did we do an excellent job? Like, you know, what do we look? I looked at like Apple's and I was like, that looks kind of fun. They use like sprites for like the wind stuff. And then we talked to a friend who's really into weather maps, and it's like, no, Apple's is useless for like all those reasons. We're like, we would have not known that. We would have spent all this time on building a particle engine maybe to make it look pretty.
Yeah.
But then they were like, you know.
Yeah.
So I think we're trying to do things that we can evaluate ourselves as whether we succeeded in what we set out to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for that, being able to build things that we want to use and we cannot wait to mm-hmm. have them built so we can use them ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is for Mercury yeah. focus.
I think that's just a good way for us to build, like, to build features that are then like fun features to use, because if we are excited to build them, I think it will be enjoyable to use them and people will get value out of them. I think something like weather radars that are like very much like a user requested feature and not a Kaya Malin requested feature, it's probably something we might still get to, but we really want to put that sort of special spin on it and have something that's like, we don't want to just check a checkbox and add it because people ask for it. We want to think about like, how can this be like special for Mercury?
But it's also, the feedback loop is super tight, right? When we build something that we want to use ourselves, we try it on our app, like that kind of brings us back to the prototyping thing, right? We have it on our phone and we're like, this sucks. And then we make a change and we're like, cool, this sucks slightly mm-hmm. less. It's still not right there. And we just keep going until we're like, cool, now we're actually happy with it.
Yeah.
With something like the radar, we would be like, I guess that's fine. mm-hmm. We wouldn't really. And then we would have to send it to people that then give us feedback. And we're like, yeah, that, I guess that makes sense. But I wouldn't even know how to necessarily classify feedback when, you know, people have conflicting ideas of how weather radar should work. Well, at the moment, we're kind of in a situation, if someone tells us they want it this way, but we really think it's better the other way, we feel like we have a strong opinion on why we're doing it the way we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And we can just keep going and we're not, you know, getting ourselves bogged down by trying to figure out what person whose values in this particular feature we don't understand mm-hmm. might be the best to give us feedback and who should we follow. Like, there are some products for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
People often talk about, like, getting a lot of user feedback and then iterating on a product, but which we definitely do more on the Orbit mm-hmm. side because there's so many more use cases. But on a weather app, we just feel like there are so many options and the cost of trying all the ones on the App Store is so low, right? You can just download 100 weather apps if you want and find the one that works best for you.
Mm.
So if we keep focusing on the things that make the app better for us and like things that we feel like are interesting or clever or just fun to use,
mm-hmm.
there are probably enough people that share our values that there's enough that people, you know, also get enjoyment out of using what we built.
Hmm.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's a really, because it's like so hard to get feedback. I've found anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Getting feedback from people mm-hmm. and just reaching out, like, it's just, it's not as high of a priority for other people as it is for those who make the app.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's like, which is an obvious statement, but, you know, it's something you got to think about. So I like your idea about, like, just focusing on what you want to do and what you like to do and what you feel is, like, part mm-hmm. of the big picture of the app.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
But it's also, I know that doesn't always work, right? It really depends on what you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
If you work on something, like Mercury was a thing that came from that, right? We mm-hmm. built it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That was the main objective, was something we enjoy using. And mm-hmm. just, and the fact that other people enjoy it solidified that kind of decision-making process in building Mercury for that.
Mm-hmm.
That would have never worked for Orbit, because for Orbit, we use it in one very particular way.
Mm-hmm.
But we have so many people that have legitimate reasons. Like, we have a lot of people that, lawyers, that use Orbit. And they need to round the time they track to the, they round up to 6 minutes. So they have, like, nice decimals on their invoices. And they round up because they're lawyers. And lawyers always round up. We would never round up, right? If we work on client projects, why would we round up? That's not time we spent on the project.
Mm-hmm.
We just use the exact thing. A friend of ours rounds down. He wants the nice decimal numbers on the invoice, but he does not want to overcharge, so he rounds down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those
mm-hmm.
are things, like, it makes sense that people have different priorities on those, how mm-hmm. they invoice, right? That makes sense. I wouldn't say, hey, all the lawyers in the world should invoice exactly the way we do it, because
mm-hmm.
that's the way we like to do it. No, that makes no sense, right?
Yeah.
For Orbit, we totally have features in there that we barely use.
Yeah.
We still...
Yeah.
But they were still features we understood, right? We're not building tax accounting systems for, you know, for foreigners living in Japan. Like, that was one request we actually had. But that's like, how would you even get into that, right? You now have to learn Japanese because all the tax documents in Japanese, the chances of things changing there are so high, and we would not be able to keep up with that. So we're just staying away from the things we know we have no business mm-hmm. to be in, and we would not mm-hmm. be able to maintain.
Yeah.
But we're still building yeah. things. If people have legitimate reasons that yeah. they need a feature, we're yeah. still trying to
yeah. and
figure
if
out
there's
how to accommodate for them.
If there's this one feature, like the rounding, that sort of unlocks it to be used by like all those people in the law, like in different law firms, then that makes sense. And it's like a broader request that a lot of people will get benefit of. So it made a lot of sense to add that. And we understand that like everyone isn't working in a way that we work in. So they would use Orbit in a different way. And I think if those features weren't there, they just couldn't use it. But I think something like Mercury, if there's one feature that's not there or one feature that works different from what people are used to, that's not necessarily a problem. That might just be that they are using a weather app in a different way from what we do, and they are
right.
like, happy to try something else. So it's not like
and
a
you can also
breaker.
Use yeah, and you can use multiple, right?
Yeah.
There's no problem. You're not going to use 5 different time tracking invoicing apps. That's just going to, mm-hmm. I mean, you could, right. but that becomes really confusing real quick.
Yeah.
But I pay for 4 or 5 weather apps just of, you know, other indie developers that I appreciate and that I want to support and that, you know, they work on interesting things. So I'm happy to like switch over to something else and have a look there. And, you know, that's, there's not a lot of, you're not going to have an incomplete picture of the weather if you're splitting your weather app time between like 2 or 3 apps. Mm-hmm. That's totally.
Right. Right.
I think people can do.
Before we close out, I have one more question.
Make it a good one.
For those aspiring indie developers or perhaps just someone who has a really great idea, what should somebody think about before they go ahead and build that app?
It's a tough question because I think it depends so much on the idea or the specific thing they want to build. But I do think, like, generally, what we really like is to have something, like Kai mentioned, like with the prototypes, like have something that you yourself can use quickly, because then that will sort of, it serves sort of two purposes. It helps you to evaluate the idea and evaluate if mm-hmm. that's what you want to continue building and where you want to take that app or the product. But the other thing is just, it really serves as a motivation. And I think many of us had that the first time we started programming as well. Once you program something, like once you even just like program, I think we talked to someone else about this recently, even if you just like program your first for loop and you see something being printed, like an
the
iterator
magic.
Being printed yeah. on the screen in front of you, and you wrote that, like that was such an exciting part of like learning development, that you made like a computer do something. And I think having a product in mind and like already having a prototype and like sort of seeing your idea come to life can just be a very cool motivator. If it's something that you might not have, like you might not be able to spend like all your time, like you probably didn't like quit your job to go full in on this. It might be something that you only do in the weekends or in the afternoons. And I think having that initial sort of prototype serves as a motivator of like going back to it and continuing iterating on it and continuing building it.
I would yep. also say try to find someone that you can trust being brutally honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have that built in, right? If I design something, Malin might, you know, completely trash it. Because sometimes that happens, right? You work on something, you're like, I think this is fine, and you don't realize the things that are not good until you either step away for a while
mm-hmm.
or you get someone else and you see them using it for the first time, and you immediately get this feeling of like, oh no, this is, yes, I now see why this is not good. And if you have someone, and that's kind of bringing us back to the getting feedback is mm-hmm. hard. I think it's a good trait in people. Most people want to tell you the things that are good. You know, if you show them something, it's like, look, I put a lot of work and a lot of sweat and tears into this product. What do you think? Most people's instinct is not to say, here are all the things that suck, right? Most people want to tell you, hey, good job, and I really love this. But I think if there's a lot of value in having someone in your life, ideally someone that you continuously trust with those kind of things.
Yeah, you don't just ask the question once and then that
yeah.
ends the relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you have someone that you can show things and they will tell you, I like the functionality, but UI really needs some work, or
mm-hmm.
this is kind of annoying. And even if you're not immediately saying, all right, I implement everything this person says, but just having someone that kind of pushes you out of the kind of tunnel vision of you build something back into like, all right, let me step back and see, does this actually make sense? Is this
mm-hmm.
actually beautiful? Does this look as good as... Does this look the best it could be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some when we built Mercury in the beginning, in the early days, we had a friend that constantly complained about the performance. Mm-hmm. And we're like, yeah, but, you know, it's a new API, might get better. We didn't want to spend time on it initially because we're like, surely it's going to be fixed by the time IR 16 ships. Mm-hmm. And then we just got used to it and didn't think about it anymore. Right. And we shipped it. And then this person kept nagging us. And we're like, you know, you're actually totally right. This is, we just accepted it at some point because we kept, you know, mm-hmm. it was just part of our cycle. And at some point you got used to it.
Right.
So we finally then, like, I think it's a year ago now, but mm-hmm. after shipping it, we finally tackled the performance issues, and the app is so much better as mm-hmm. a result of that. I don't think you get a lot of people that say, I downloaded this app before because the performance is better, but there were just so many things that just now, every time you open it, everything is immediately there. Mm-hmm. Before that, we would always show like a placeholder.
It just feels a lot snappier as a result of that, even if it's something that people don't notice that it is there because... They would notice the absence of it.
And that was super valuable feedback. And being persistently mm-hmm. honest about that it's still not good just helped us. Not that we couldn't have realized it ourselves, but having someone that keeps telling you that.
It sort of holds you accountable to it as well. Yeah. Like, you're really going to do this? Yeah.
Yeah. Helps you to, you know, get out of your tunnel vision of, you know, we all do that sometimes, right? When we use a new Swift UI API and somehow the scrolling is... you know, mm-hmm. drops frames, you're like, I guess it's an Apple thing. What are you going to do? Maybe it's getting better in the future. But if you have someone that nags you about it, you're like, all right, maybe I can actually improve the performance here somewhere. What do I do in this role?
That's what I hate is like those blind spots where it's like mm-hmm. you get used to something, doing something, and you don't, you just get, you know, it rolls right off you. But then you get a new user to use an app and then they notice those things and you're like, oh yeah, I didn't notice that was really crappy. I should probably fix that. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I totally get it.
And it's also, if there's like a meetup, like a developer meetup in the area, it's also, if you don't already have someone like that, I think meetups is a really good spot to find a whole bunch of people that are really passionate mm-hmm. about, you know, iOS development, Apple platform development, or mobile development in general. To find those kind of people. And also, you know, if you watch them use your app for the first time, mm-hmm. and even if they don't tell you, you can see, you know, if they're like, if you just read the face and like an impression someone has when they like something doesn't work quite right, you're like, oh yeah, that actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Also, then to be able to take that feedback is, I think, also important. Mm-hmm. Because if you tell someone, hey, stop being so mean to my app, they probably won't keep being honest mm-hmm. with you. But if you're, you know, if you're sitting there crying because they said the text is too small, I think that makes it harder to give you honest feedback. But if you're showing appreciation, I think people will mm-hmm. try to be honest mm-hmm. and give you useful feedback in the future too.
Yep.
Well, Kai and Malin, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. This has been fantastic. Before we close out, I'll let you go ahead and plug your social handles and URLs and such.
Yeah.
We're really bad at introducing ourselves or plugging our own stuff. So it ends weird. It started with a struggle introduction and will end with a struggling plug. So Malin, you the first.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I think this is a hard time to share your social media handles.
This is going to be an extra 10 minutes.
Do you have another 10 minutes? Yeah. Yes. But yeah, if you search for, in most places, I'm Malin Sundberg, and you can just search for my first and last name after one another. Apart from, I think I have both accounts on Mastodon as well, but my main one you can find me at is just malin@mastodon.social. And in most other places, it's Malin Sundberg, just my full name. And yeah, if you want to also check out our apps, Mercury Weather on the App Store is probably the easiest way of finding that. And Orbit is a little bit trickier because we wanted to have a cool name, but it's a little bit hard just searching Orbit. So if you're interested, go for search for Orbit Time Tracking or go to timeinorbit.com directly to our website.
And I made it a little bit harder. I have completely different, not completely, but mostly different names on all the things. So Erkai on Twitter, that was a name I picked when I was really into basketball. Kai Dombrowski on Threads, and I think just Kai.
Really? Yeah, three different ones.
I think so. I think I made it as hard as possible. Yeah, I think Kai at Mastodon Social.
Awesome.
On Mastodon.
So we'll put links to those in the show notes. Thank you so much, Kai and Malin. It was great to see you again.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
This was fun.
Yeah.
People can find me on X at LeoGDeon, Mastodon at LeoGDeon, at C.IM. My company is Bright Digit. You can go there for the latest articles and podcast episodes and videos and all that fun stuff. Thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to talking to you again. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
You're better at this.